It's the How Games Make Money podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Grubb from GamesBeat.com. This is the show where I talk to people working in and around games and ask them, how does this business work? Is it just playing games on Twitch all day? New episodes come out each Monday. That's a joke at this point. I'm sorry. I got the new Xbox Series X, so it's been really hard to keep up with the schedule because I've been just working on that nonstop. And as soon as I get done with this, I'm going to go back to working on that. On this episode, however, I'm going to be talking to Andre Reynad Yannick. He is the chief executive officer of the esports organization Tempo Storm. He started out as a pro gamer, but he also equally embraced life as a content creator. Eventually, he started Tempo Storm and stepped into the CEO role to focus on creating a multimedia company that leverages the popularity of its talent both as competitors and as influencers. And now, after years of promoting other people's games, Tempo Storm is working on a game of its own, and Andre sees this as his opportunity to turn his business into the Bloomberg of esports. I promise he'll explain what that means here in a little bit. First, though, thank you for listening. You can get more from me at gamesbeat.com. Email me at jeff.grubb@gmail.com with the subject line, How Games Make Money. Or reach out on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Grubb. The podcast is at HGMM Show. You could support this show, by the way. I have a Patreon. Go to patreon.com/HGMM. That's for How Games Make Money. Anything you provide is going to go directly towards supporting this show. If you join the Patreon, you get into the Discord, but there's a special Discord channel in there that's only for Patreon subscribers. I hang out there a lot. We have a really good conversations. As I'm working on the Xbox Series X stuff, I'm in there talking about things with some friends. Thank you for tuning in this episode. Let's get to the interview right now. All right, joining me now is Andre. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is Andre Yannick. I'm the CEO of Tempo, and former streamer and professional gamer.
I really appreciate you joining me. I've been I started this show earlier this year, and I have like a list in my head of the kinds of people I need to have on here, and someone in your role has always been at the top of the list. I've been trying to make it happen, and so I'm glad we could finally actually get someone from the professional gaming world on here. And I find it interesting because it's similar to a lot of traditional jobs that people think of, like it's similar to an athlete, but it has some of its own. It seems to me like your job has a lot of its own sort of specialities, where like you are also very much an entertainer as well. Like you're equally an entertainer. So I was wondering maybe if you could just talk to me about how you view yourself and how you view your job and what you do.
Sure. Yeah. I wear a lot of hats these days. These days, I guess I just consider myself a CEO. That's the first thing that comes to mind. The company is my main priority. I've fully transitioned out of content creation, even though, I still dabble here and there. I'm not doing it full time anymore. I'd say CEO definitely. I do still compete occasionally too. I actually played a tournament a week ago. But yeah, I mean, out of all the things I've done over the years in esports, I think at this point, it's just gone fully corporate, become a boomer.
I mean, yeah, you had to get there eventually, but I mean, what was that path like? So, I mean, like, where did you start and when did you realize that you were a CEO first?
Yeah, it was definitely a long road. I found Twitch pretty early on. I was a streamer back in 2012 when I found the website. A light bulb went off the first time I watched the stream, and I fell in love with it, and just, I thought it was like the next evolution of YouTube, and there's all this room for growth. So yeah, I just jumped into it, started streaming full time right away. I got partnered within a couple of weeks. And then I was a competitor in card games at the time and strategy games. So I was definitely doing that full time while streaming. And eventually Hearthstone came out, and my channel really took off. So streaming suddenly became, not just a full-time career, but one where I was making like decent money and needing to put in a lot of hours and like actually scale it. And the workload is increasing. At the same time, I was still trying to compete in all these tournaments and be a top level player. Basically right when the stream took off, the first thing I did is found the company. So basically I was always juggling kind of those three things, competing, streaming, and I guess operations for the company. And, you know, at first it was the competitive gaming that kind of took a backseat to the other two. The other two are pretty complementary. You know, if you're trying to grow a brand, it's very helpful to have a big personal brand yourself. So yeah, eventually it was streaming and the job. And then eventually I just started streaming less and less, focusing on the company more and more. We got more ambitious with the things we're doing. We got a lot of cool projects in motion that just needed more and more of my attention. And yeah, at this point, yeah, no more day-to-day streaming, just full time focusing on Tempo and, you know, growing and building our interactive media products. Yeah.
If you ask someone like you know, someone who isn't very familiar, who doesn't pay attention, kind of what they would imagine a pro gamer is like, they're like, well, it's probably someone who just plays a game professionally and tries to win tournaments, and that's where their money comes from. To me, though, looking at it, it does seem like for the most part, it is about that personal brand first. It is about creating content first, because that seems to be more reliable in terms of building an income. Is that right?
Yeah. Between the two, I think content creation is definitely the more stable career. There's definitely more money in it right now. You know, brands are finally comfortable working with professional gamers, whether it's on Twitch or YouTube. There have been a lot of agencies at this point that have experience doing campaigns like this. People are starting to understand what's important when it comes to, you know, selling a brand in front of gamers. Basically, it's all these things, just the whole advertising space growing in gaming over the past few years, really, really changed that value proposition, I guess. To be fair, I don't know if it was ever the other way around. I think content creation was pretty much always a better career than competing, but it's just because esports is so nascent, I'd say.
You imagine a world where a person would be too busy with just their esports career and, you know, getting sponsorships, and that's all too lucrative to actually even worry about content creation? Or is content creation always going to be kind of a part of it?
You know, you definitely see a lot of professional players that purely focus on the game. Usually it's the high profile esports, things like League of Legends or Counter-Strike. You know, you'll have like the fakers of the game really be all in on competing, or at least early on in their career they were. You know, even with Faker, though, now I guess he's streaming these days. So, you know, I think it changes for every person throughout their career. You know, the reality is they're two completely different skill sets. Being an entertainer online and being a competitive player in a specific game, and the people that can marry the two skills tend to be the most successful. So it's definitely better to know how to do both, but most players start by focusing on one, and you tend to see the competitors transition to content creation more often than the content creators transition into competition, just because the financial incentives in favor of content creation. And also just, it's really fucking hard to be good at a game. It's just so many hours. No game is meant to be played 20 hours a day.
Yeah, I don't. This is a tangent, but there was that thing going around where someone, I don't even know who it was, saying that streaming Smash for, you know, 10 hours a day is harder than a minimum wage job. How do you feel about that?
Statements like that always come down to semantics. It just depends on how you define the word harder. It's harder in some ways. It's easier in other ways. Is it physically exhausting? No. Is there issues with coworkers or any like internal politics they have to deal with? No, but you know, there's parallels of a lot of those things on the internet, and it's taxing in a different way. You know, I think streaming, when you want to make money off of it, you want to just do it as much as possible. That's the difference between Twitch and YouTube. On YouTube, you make one video and then it works for you 24 hours a day making money. On Twitch, you only make money during the time you're live. So, I mean, that means what, a 3-hour broadcast a few times a week for a lot of people. It basically, if you want to stream as a career, you have to put a ton of hours into it. But the more hours that you put into it, the more it hurts your mental health in the long run. So it's really hard to strike a healthy balance between, you know, having growth and improving your career, but at the same time, you know, still enjoying streaming after 5 years. Still having a good relationship with your community, still waking up in the morning and actually wanting to play the game that you're playing, because if you don't, you know, that's gonna read on camera. It's just very noticeable to the viewer. You need to be in a good mood to make a good show. So yeah, basically, I think for mental health reasons, I think streaming is a very high risk career in the long run, and it is difficult, absolutely, to do it for 10 hours a day, but in a different way, you know.
I totally get that. I mean, I write at a computer for, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And I come out and I'm exhausted and it's hard to do other things. And it's just mentally. And I used to work all those minimum wage jobs. So I could definitely see how labor is labor. We all just kind of, you're going to feel it no matter what. And I think grass is always greener is kind of actually applying here a little bit. Let's talk about Tempo Storm. To me, it seems like this esports franchise, as I see it called, reflects yourself in the way that, you know, you wear many hats. It also wears many hats, where it's, you know, I think people might just call it an esports team, but it's definitely more than just a team. It's not like the New York Yankees. It is also a media creation company and all these other things. Tell me about that. Tell me about all of the roles that this company needs to fill.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, when we were founded, I was a 22-year-old kid that wanted to make a company. You know, I didn't really know anything about anything. What I knew was esports, and I knew how to identify players that were really good at children's card games. This was like the niche I understood very well. So I basically said, okay, let's do an esports team. You know, I see these things popping up everywhere for League of Legends. And this was like 2014 at the time. It was like long before esports was like mainstream and newsworthy to a lot of people. So I basically said, okay, well, instead of League of Legends, I'm going to make an esports team, and we're going to start in the game that I understand, right, which is Hearthstone. And we grew that just by entering more games over time, but the business model just never really made a ton of sense to me. Traditional esports team just kind of operates like a bad agency. You basically have to pay a bunch of money up front to teenagers to sign them, and then invest more money into growing their brand, hoping that like a sponsor wants them and will go through the team to make some sort of brand deal happen. It's a very convoluted, high risk process for most teams. So basically, you know, after a few years, I said, look, we need to be building products. We need to be selling services. We can't just be like middlemanning brand deals. I don't think that's a long-term like scalable business model. I don't think it's the future of esports companies. So instead of just being a team, we built out a production arm. This is like 2017. Started experimenting a lot with like IRL streaming and stuff. You know, we were the first production company to be like regularly doing a ton of interactive shows on Twitch and travel shows. We did like the first live streamed helicopter rides and things like that, and just tried like seeing what we could do with the tech limits when it came to production in the live streaming space in esports. We had a lot of success with that. I mean, you know, we did a lot of shows, had a lot of clients, won some awards. The production arm was basically the first new thing we were doing. So suddenly it was like esports team plus production arm. And these two things worked very well together. We realized, hey, you know, we have all these influencers, all these professional players, these gamers, they have a following. Let's just use them as talent in a lot of these shows. Let's have the talent participate in the shows in some way, or let's have them help promote them. And then the production arm was helping the streamers and the content creators a lot, because suddenly we could do these just really nice, like documentary style pieces around our players that really help tell their story a little bit more. So, you know, we found the esports branch of the company is really complementary with production, and we started using the two to start promoting brands. You know, whereas other teams would just put a logo on a jersey of one of their players, you know, we suddenly had this like studio and in-house production team, and we could go out there and do like a really nice custom piece for, you know, any brand in the world. We really found a lot of success with that. Basically, the production arm was helping the money we were making. It was getting us new clients. It was just really effective. So we started promoting all this different stuff, and eventually we started working with publishers, where basically, you know how I said earlier how like brands became more comfortable working with streamers in the space?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a lot of game companies started paying streamers to promote their game, which makes a ton of sense. It turns out streamers are kind of how people decide what games to play these days. Streamers are very effective at this. So out of all the different products we've ever promoted in the history of the company, when we tried promoting video games by doing a direct publisher relationship, it was like the best we've ever pushed any product. Like we drove a ton of downloads. It was like very ROI positive, very great campaigns. And we basically realized, holy shit, we're sitting on this like distribution tool that is so effective at driving game downloads. And I mean, the natural thought that we had after that was, well, what if we just got rid of the middleman? You know, what does it take to make a game these days? Mm-hmm. You know, luckily our core fan base is strategy game players, card game players. That's a pretty inexpensive genre of game to make for a video game. And we found that there are a lot of extremely competent animation studios and software vendors around the world with just incredible expertise in making a game. They could do it really cost effectively. So basically we decided, look, we're going to be the first esports team to start developing our own game. And we think it'll be successful because we know we have a good distribution engine. We know that we can promote other people's games successfully. And, you know, not all the games we've promoted in history, and we've promoted like dozens, maybe hundreds of games at this point. These, you know, not all of them are AAA phenomenal games. Like right. The fail case still seemed very safe to me. Yeah, it sounds like a weird business model, but I don't really think it's actually that strange. I mean, I'd compare it to something like, I don't know, like Bloomberg, I guess, if I had to, right? They own business media, but a ton of their revenue for a long time was based on this one high margin product, which is the Bloomberg terminal, right? So for us, that's going to be our game. We have everything else.
There's like a bunch of topics I want to go down here, but the first one is, how have fans responded to the, you know, to you promoting games? They seem pretty open to it, right? Like it seems like you keep going back to it and has been a problem so far. So they seem to say, hey, you know, go ahead and tell us if this game is good or not. And no one seems to be like, oh, you know, a sellout or anything like that.
Oh, for sure. Right. It's not like I'm going there trying to sell them an energy drink or whatever. It's like, we know our fans love gaming. I mean, that's why they follow us, and we love gaming. And talking about games is, I don't know, it's fun. It's always interesting, you know, even if it's not something you're going to end up playing, or it's not something I'm going to end up playing, I like hearing about it. So yeah, I don't know. We haven't exactly heard pushback. In fact, people have been pretty excited that we've been making a game. You know, it's kind of a unique scenario. There hasn't been to my knowledge, a big streamer that went out, developed their own game, and then shipped it. I don't think it's ever happened in Twitch, at least to my knowledge. So this is like a bit of a test case, right? Esports teams don't make games. Streamers don't make games. And yet they're so close to the gaming ecosystem in every way. I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on this just to see, you know, is this a viable business model? How well is the game going to do? And, you know, can these guys really promote it well, like they say they can?
I'll be paying attention to that. Like, cause it's, to me, it seems like, you promote something like Valorant, or you promote something that, has a lot of budget behind it, or a big name. And to me, it's like, okay, yeah. I could see where the streamers fit into that marketing plan, where, you know, you show up and you get a bunch of people that already have a built-in audience to play that game on day one to make sure it moves to the top of the Twitch charts. And then after that, it sort of becomes a self-perpetuating machine or whatever. To me, the idea of building the game yourself and trying to make that happen for yourself is interesting, and I could see the logic in it, but also it seems like it might not necessarily follow that same path because it's not Valorant. But you said you've done this with dozens of games, so you would know better than me. Like, even like the worst game campaign that you guys have run, did it still help the game that you promoted?
Yeah, all of our campaigns do very well for publishers. The thing I want to say here is, like, you know, we're not like some incompetent studio making a mediocre game. This game is actually going to be quite excellent, and it's a genre I understand very well. Right, my entire adult life and most of my teenage years, quite literally all I've done is play strategy games, and I have 8 years of experience in streaming them and participating in esports around them. I think there are a few people more qualified to make a watchable esports game in this genre than somebody that's lived it for, you know, 15 years or whatever at this point. So, you know, in my opinion, I think the game will do well. It's on schedule. The process has been challenging, but it's been going surprisingly well so far. Everything's on schedule. The game's looking great. It's playing great. It's coming out less than a year. It's coming out in early 2021. Yeah, we just can't wait to see how it does in the market. We really do think this is a damn good product. This is not, you know, like a mediocre clone of another game. This is an innovative take on the format, and, you know, we would know.
I want to say, like, to me, I would just be afraid because the space seems so crowded. But again, you know this space better than I do. You know it better than almost anyone. So the idea that you felt that it was worth pursuing, to me, says that, you know, it probably is. It is a crowded space, and making games is hard. And you spoke like it's been challenging, but it sounds like, for the most part, it's been a positive experience, and it hasn't turned you off the idea of making a game. You're not like, oh, I didn't know what I was getting into. It seems like so far you've met the challenges and surpassed them, and you guys are ready to keep heading toward launch. Is that correct?
Oh yeah. The thing I'm most excited for is making a second one. I mean, this process has been awesome. So excited to finally just like own a product that we can distribute mm-hmm. to the world. That is just such a, esports teams don't do that. You're always a middleman. You're always two steps removed from the relationship with the fan or the relationship with the brand. You know, in this case, like we're going to own our product. We're going to own the relationship with our players. And we're using esports and streamers at what they're good at, which is complementing the marketing and just getting the word out and building hype around the product.
But I could see why some streamers would be like, yeah, I could see why you're doing this, but also developers always seem to have a really tenuous relationship or a fragile relationship with fans where, you know, you are now directly monetizing fans for the thing that they want in a way that is, to me, it feels different than like, getting donations for a stream or whatever. It feels like, okay, I'm selling you a product in a game and I'm trying to make sure that I'm getting the biggest lifetime value from each player. And people can be resentful towards that. Even like, you know, Blizzard, big beloved company, they make a few mistakes. Now the people have kind of a sour feeling toward Blizzard. Do you feel any risk there of getting to a point where, if this is your main product, where you could begin alienating your biggest fans?
Well, I think you're so right that it's a different type of accountability than like if you're a streamer talking to your fans. You know, as soon as you're a publisher that's selling them a product, there's a lot of assumptions that go into that. Like, this product is fun. It's worth my money. If you fail to deliver on those promises, you're going to end up with a lot of people being really angry. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Look, for us so far, keep in mind, our game's not out yet. It's in development. It's coming out soon. It's almost there, but it's not out yet. And, you know, so far, the reaction from our community has just been, they're just super excited, and we're really making them a part of the process. You know, like, because the game's still in development, we've actually integrated our fans into the development process. So they're picking what direction we go with some of the smaller things in the game, like art or certain musical styles, visuals, like character direction, things like that. We've had them kind of chiming in on the process the entire way with direct polls and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, so far, we haven't seen any resentment. People just seem to be really excited. But, you know, that could definitely change a year from now. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, I imagine it'll keep you on your toes. I don't know if we've said the name of the game. It's The Bazaar, right? That's the name of the game?
Yeah. The game is called The Bazaar. It's about an intergalactic marketplace where all these creatures and species from everywhere in the universe are coming together to trade and barter. And for whatever reason, they can all survive on this planet. And it's just about just being this huge melting pot of different cultures and styles and crazy aliens and characters and, you know, everything from medieval weaponry to plasma rifles. What we're really going for here is just maximum thematic design space. So it's just a scalable IP that can pretty much fit any type of character or universe or setting into it. And, we really think it's a solid base, and I don't know. We got some fun characters. I'm excited to see it all come together. Yeah.
I guess give me your broader take on where things are headed. You know, not just about like branching out and working with different kinds of people, but what's next? Like the game comes out, is it mostly going to be focusing on making the next game, or do you have other things in mind?
The game coming out is it's not just like a thing that happens. It's like this big involved process that I want to make sure we do right. You know, first of all, we started as an esports company, and you know, people are looking to us to see what does an esports team do when they actually own the game. That's kind of the timeless problem, is the publisher gets in the way of the business. That's the issue with esports, just at a high level. You know, I want to make sure, you know, we don't just like launch the game and then see what's next. It's like, let's make sure we launch the esports scene correctly. You know, instead of doing like a top down, like large league model where we try to sell franchise spots and act like it's the biggest esport in the world on day one, let's, you know, do the exact opposite of that. Let's focus on bottom up grassroots growth. Let's put a budget to, let's sell cosmetics in game, like Dota does for TI, for example, where some percentage of revenue goes towards the esports scene, and that budget goes towards, you know, not large flagship invite tournaments, but, you know, high school collegiate level events, small school programs, things like that. Things that actually get people playing in the game, not watching a stream that was advertised to them online.
What does it mean to take care of the esports side and do right by the esports side for your own game? What does that look like? Like, what are you going to do that you wish other games had done?
I mean, just like most responsible decisions in life, I think it just pretty much boils down to prioritizing long-term health over short-term numbers. You know, prioritizing long-term over short-term. Like, you need to make sure that people are actually competing in your game, like, of their own volition, and it's not just like this exclusive league that only 8 people in the world participate in. Nobody else can relate to what it's like to test for that format. You know, there's certain best practices that are important from just like a watchability standpoint. I mean, those are things you have to address at the game design level, but also in production. But really, it's just about supporting the grassroots community. It's about not taking shortcuts. It's about organically building a fan base over time. That means targeting high school and collegiate levels. That means a lot of just grassroots community initiatives. That means a lot of you know staffing people to make sure that like several Discord servers are maintained and have a high engagement level. It's not like I wish I could tell you it's this one neat trick, but the honest answer is it's just making dozens of small decisions tactically that all prioritize the long-term health of the game over the short term. Instead, developers tend to kind of embrace the cyclical nature of gaming, and it's all about how many downloads can we get, you know, this quarter, this year, and you know, the games end up dying out so quickly and being replaced by another that it's just not the way you build a sport. You know, you really need your game to have lasting power, and the way you build lasting power is planting seeds and being patient. Yeah.
Yeah. If it was one easy trick, you know, these companies would have done it. Right. So it's going to take that, you know, that long-term investment. That makes a lot of sense. Andre, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it. Before we do leave, do you want to tell people where they can follow you, where they can follow Tempo Storm, where they can find the game, all that stuff?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Yeah, you can just find me on Twitter is probably the best place. It's just Tempo Reynad, TempoReynad. And then, yeah, just search Tempo Storm pretty much anywhere. You guys can find us all over.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'll be back with another new episode next week. Until then, take care of yourself. Have a good one, and goodbye.